ahoy, hoy, hoy. I am reaching out to you all from the great state of Minnesota, the wonderful state of Minnesota, the unfortunately not peaceful state of Minnesota. We are currently essentially under siege by our own government, and there are certain things you can do to help. So if you are so inclined, I'm going to post some links to places where you can send aid and support if you care at all about aiding and supporting the people, human beings, just like you. That's it. I don't have anything else to add. Let's do the show. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez. And how is that for an opening? How is that for a topper? How is that for a beginning to a show about a dumb family of bears, a bunch of cartoon character bears who've been around for over 60 years, and there's never been any strife like this in Bear Country, has there? Has there? There certainly has. This there has. There was literally a great bear war that apparently exists within living memory of a lot of the bears, even though it's supposed to be like their equivalent of our Civil War. So I don't know when, like, exactly how time works in bear world, or maybe the bears live to be like 300 years old. I'm not sure. I've only been doing this show for 10 and a half years, going on 11. We haven't settled on the longevity of a bear yet. Brother and sister have been small children for 60 years. It's been going on for a while. But this week, we are watching two episodes of the 1985 Saturday morning television program called The Berenstain Bears. If you were alive in the 1980s, like I was, you certainly watched the show, because what else was there to watch? What, you're going to watch the gummy bears? Probably. You're going to watch the Wuzzles? Probably. But I watched The Berenstain Bears. And this week, we've got an episode based on one of my favorite books, one of the most popular Berenstain Bears books. We got The Trouble with Girls? No girls allowed. The Berenstain Bears and The Trouble with Girls. The Trouble with Females. No, The Berenstain Bears, no girls allowed. And Missing Dinosaur Bones. So two actual books, two very popular books. One is a first time book, and one is an I Can Read book. One of the Cub Club books. One of those. I think it's an I Can Read It All By Myself book. It's a bear detectives. There's a missing dinosaur bone, and they have to find out where the dinosaur bone is. And so I'm excited to watch these two episodes. I think I watched No Girls Allowed when I covered the book, or maybe I didn't. Actually, that was, I think, the first year of the show I covered the book of No Girls Allowed. So it's the one where they build the clubhouse, which you can visit. I assume it's still there. You can visit the actual clubhouse if you go to the Strong Museum in New York. They have a little replica of it. I visited it with Brad and Jeremy. Man, like a decade ago. It was like a decade ago, people. It was so long ago. So are you ready to go into the movie theater, I guess, and watch the Berenstain Bears? Join me in the movie theater. And then we'll talk about the show when it's done. Here we go. We're going into the movie theater. Oh, I guess our show is over. I guess it's time to head back to the studio. We're no longer in the theater. We're going to head back. Here we go. And we're back. So we just watched two episodes, or one episode in two segments, of the 1985 Berenstain Bears Saturday morning show, based on No Girls Allowed and The Missing Dinosaur Bone. And they're two fairly faithful adaptations. If you remember No Girls Allowed, that's the one where we spent a little bit of time covering that brother and sister are different ages, and that sister is quickly caught up developmentally with brother. So she now is capable of competing with him and his friends at various physical activities, climbing trees, playing marbles, running races, playing baseball. And she's gotten better and better than them, to the point where she's now being very boastful about it. She has a little victory dance she does whenever she beats any of them, and she beats them all the time. This builds and builds the tension in the friend group until they finally decide they don't want to play with sister anymore, so they build a clubhouse and declare that no girls are allowed in the clubhouse. Sister gets furious. In retaliation, she and Papa build a no boys allowed clubhouse. But then she explains to Mama that she wants it to be no boys allowed because the boys are bad losers. And Mama explains to Sister that there's such thing as bad winners as well. And Sister realizes that her boasting and bragging is actually alienating people from being her friends. Sportsmanship is a two-way street, I guess. And so as a way of sort of like bridging the gap between the friend groups, because she has a bunch of her girlfriends there helping her with her new clubhouse, they Papa barbecues a bunch of salmon and honey. The boys smell it. They come over. They ask if they can partake. The girls welcome them into their treehouse, and they realize they all have their Sister realizes that maybe she was being a little off-putting in her behavior, and the boys realize they were being unfair to Sister. They probably should have all talked about it. That's the book. That's the plot of the book. We get some great illustrations of the super kick-awesome playhouse, the super kick-awesome treehouse that Papa helps the girls or designs for the girls and that they build. My guest in that episode was Stuart Wellington from the Flophouse podcast, because I remember I finagled into getting him on the show because he had mentioned this book in an episode of the Flophouse, and I was like, hey, you mentioned the clubhouse from No Girls Allowed, you gotta be on the show now. And we talked a lot about how awesome this clubhouse was, and you don't really get that much in the episode. You don't get the sort of the sense, like, it doesn't have the same like earthiness, the tangible quality of the illustrations in the book, where you feel like you could just sort of like hang out in this clubhouse. Also the girls' treehouse, it just doesn't have the same, you can't just study the image like we did as kids. That was a big part of No Girls Allowed, was these two amazing clubhouses that you liked to imagine yourself being in. They're sort of these idealized structures that I would be surprised if a child could build them. But so this episode was very faithful to the book. What it did add, though, it didn't take anything away. It just added backstory. So it starts off with the family watching or looking through photo albums, watching home, and then they watch home movies. You get a lot of very specific Cecil B. DeMille jokes. Like, Mama compares Papa's filmmaking to Cecil B. DeMille. Papa is obsessing over the framing of scenes, the transitions between shots, the mise-en-scene. And Sister is mostly taken with the fact that she, in the videos, was very small and couldn't do the same things as brother and his friends. That's what inspires her to test and see if she's now capable of besting them in physical activities. She already has her little victory dance. Now, in the book, it mentions that it's a victory dance with backflips and war whoops. And you see Sister with her hand over her mouth. It says war whoops. You can imagine what the war whoops are. I'm going to give you a hint right now. They are not World War II bomber war whoops. They are not from any war besides the war of extermination against the Native American population. So they are that. They are the sort of offensive Indian children war whoops that kids did until they were finally told not to anymore. And she does these war whoops quite a few times in the episode, and is the one thing about the episode that has aged poorly. Another thing that's aged weirdly is the fact that her butterfly friend is always there. And in this episode, she and the butterfly have a lot of interactions, and she refers to the butterfly repeatedly as beautiful. Not like you are beautiful, but like she's like, hey, beautiful, do this for me. Hey, beautiful, could you do this for me? I guess it's named Beautiful Butterfly. She has never done this in any other episode, but the butterfly is now canonically named Beautiful. It also has a lot more anthropomorphized than it usually is. You see it like using its wings as hands. You see like a lot of close-ups of it, like interacting with Sister. Just a regular showcase for the talents of Beautiful the Butterfly. Her frog friend is nowhere to be seen. However, it is telling that in the book, The Trouble with Friends, when Sister first meets Lizzie Bruin, we hear from Mama that Sister's only friends are the frogs and the butterflies. So I'm wondering if she has to, like, slowly let Beautiful Butterfly down when she starts making friends with actual bears. But that's No Girls Allowed. It's a solid take on the book. It's a worthy adaptation. I actually remember watching this episode when I was a kid because I was a huge fan of the book. And also being like, there's something that you just can't translate from the paper to the screen of that, of the awesomeness and the tangibility of that playhouse. So the next book that gets turned into an episode, this episode, is The Berenstain Bears and the Missing Dinosaur Bone. This is a Bear Detectives, I Can Read It All By Myself, beginner book. It is a rhyming book. It's a very simple story, and it is delightfully illustrated. I love the drawings in the Missing Dinosaur Bone. Also, it features actual factual, but it features him in his I Can Read It All By Myself persona, Dr. Bear. In the book, it is Dr. Bear. Remember, in the I Can Read It All By Myself universe, in that timeline, in that part of the Bear multiverse, there is no actual factual. There is a Dr. Bear, however, who runs the Bearsonian. Actual factual is sort of a multi-universe separate extension of Dr. Bear. He is more of a community member than Dr. Bear is ever portrayed as being. But yes, Dr. Bear. So the plot of the book is that Dr. Bear is pacing up and down. The bear detectives see him through the window of the Bearsonian, that he's worried. They go in and they realize that he is distraught because one of the bones of his Tyrannosaurus skeleton is missing. So the bear detectives set out to solve the case with their dog Snuff. And this is a completely rhyming couplets book, right? It's all rhyming couplets. They go searching throughout the museum for it. They look, they think they see a thief, but it's just the Egyptian mummy sarcophagus. Goodness, what else did they do? It's a sarcophagus. They think it might be in a valuable vase, but the vase is only full of dust. There is a totem pole that they think might be a thief, but it's just a totem pole. And then they go through like these wax, this like sort of like hall of famous bears. There's like Black Bear the Pirate, Wild Bear Hickok, Queen Elizabeth, and yeah, Queen Elizabeth, Genghis Bear, but it's not there. Dr. Bear gets distraught and just figures that he's going to have to open the museum with his missing dinosaur bone. The cub's sister looks out the window, notices there's a bone-shaped impression in the yard. They go out. It's the bone. It was buried there by Snuff. The museum opens up and the bone is back. And it was Snuff the whole time. They're the bone thief. It didn't make any sense to me when I read the book. I was like, how did Snuff steal this bone? It's a giant dinosaur bone, and it's not even a real bone. It's a fossilized bone, so it's not like there's any marrow or anything in it that a dog would like. Not answered in this episode. So the episode, of course, turns Dr. Bear into actual factual, for one thing. It also incorporates Papa, turns this bear detective book into more of a bear scouts book, because this is in this one, the cubs. There's a huge line in front of the Bearsonian. There's a new exhibit, a dinosaur exhibit starting, and Actual Factual is excited. The cubs decide to sneak in the back because they're friends with Actual Factual. So they're going to go to the window and see if Actual Factual will let them in, I guess. He does, but one of the bones is missing on his dinosaur. Now, in the episode, Papa has followed them, and he's going to help them solve the mystery. So this becomes a real, like, Papa screws things up. And the cubs, it's the same as all the other episodes where this happens. Just using the plot of the missing dinosaur bone I hesitate to use the word skeleton, but as the skeleton to hang the story on. So instead of the bear detectives thinking that the sarcophagus is someone hiding in the shadows, it's Papa who thinks that. But of course, he then ends up like banging on the sarcophagus, trying to get it open. And Actual Factual is like, stop. Then Papa like sees like the giant vase. He's like, I bet the dinosaur bone's in there. And he knocks it off the pedestal, and Actual Factual the cubs have to come and keep the vase from breaking. Now in the book, it says like, there's the only thing valuable in that vase is this valuable dust. And like, I always took that to mean that it was just a joke that Dr. Bear was making. Like, there's nothing, the most valuable thing in this vase is the dust, because that's all that's in the vase. In the episode, It actually is valuable dust. He says it is dust from like the realm of Queen Elizabeth or something, which is weird because it's not like a British vase. It's an ancient, like, I think supposed to be a Greek or Roman vase that maybe it's from when they were in the, I don't know. In any case, then Papa gets trapped in a jail cell that like he goes into a wind tunnel in the air and space section and gets blown around in the wind tunnel. He has to get saved by Actual Factual. He gets caught in this jail cell and the Cubs actually consider not letting him out so they can get to actually solving the mystery. But they let him out because Snuff's in there with him and they need Snuff. They search all over this museum. And as I said while I was watching it, it's not so much detective work. It's just looking. They're just looking for the bone. Like anyone could do this because there's like there has to be a bone somewhere in this museum. And Sister says in the beginning of the episode, she's like, well, it has to be somewhere in the museum because it's way too big for someone to have just carried out. But I was like, well, that means it's just way too big for someone to have carried, period. It's clearly larger than Actual Fact. It's larger than an adult bear. And it's this giant, heavy bone. She's like, it has to be in the museum somewhere. And I'm like, if someone could actually get that thing down, they could also get it away. Doesn't occur to them. Again, there's no detective work done. It's just walking around a dark museum with a flashlight is basically their detective work. It all ends the same way. They see the impression in the ground that's shaped like a bone. They go outside. They realize that Snuff's the one who stole the bone. Everyone comes in. The exhibit's a big success, except Pop is the one who shames Snuff at the end. Still doesn't make any sense how Snuff could have stolen that bone. Doesn't make any sense at all how Snuff could have stolen that bone. And it actually stands out more in the episode since, unlike the I Can Eat It All By Myself book, which is fanciful and told in rhyme and for little kids, beautifully illustrated though, this is an episode of the TV show that's sort of set in the same universe as all the other adventures, which means it is a little more grounded in reality. It's kind of like when they tried to do like the Wacky Papa stuff in like the 2000s books and it doesn't really fit because it's a different Papa now. This is a different setup. There would have to have been, to me, some sort of explanation for how Snuff, I mean, I want that explanation. It just, it doesn't sit right with me that Snuff, was able to get the bone. Now I will note that No Girls Allowed was written, the teleplay was written by Stan and Jan, and it shows all the stuff about Cecil B. DeMille and like that whole like family thing at the beginning with the videos and the films. Really felt like Stan and Jan. It felt like the sort of wordplay they would do. The kind of like they know how to write Papa as a sort of an easily distracted character who's also smart and sort of like gets these fixated on different things that they understand the characters very well. I like the way they portray Mama and Papa's relationship, the dynamic between the two of them, how Papa stands up for Sister all the time, but Mama's the one who sees the deeper implications of the conflict. I like that, and they really write into that. They keep a lot of the dialogue from the book, but they flesh it out a little bit. I really like Stan and Jan as writers on their own show. Now, Roby Goren, who we've covered before, was the writer on The Missing Dinosaur Bone. If you remember correctly, Roby Goren was more of a gag writer. And I think that shows in the writing for The Missing Dinosaur Bone. The expansion of the story seems more to set up slapstick than it does to really flesh out the world of the Bearsonian Museum or the character of Actual Factual or even like the ins and outs of being a bear detective. It's a very different feel from the first one. And that's fine because, I mean, the Saturday morning show tended to be a segment that was based on a book, more of a life lesson story, and then an adventure. So this one was more of an adventure. I can see where they got Roby Goren to write that. It looks like next week we have another Roby Goren script, teleplay, but also a Linda Wolverton teleplay next week. So two very different writers duking it out next week. We have The Spookiest Pumpkin and The Dancing Bees, which I covered over on Patreon a decade ago. And I don't even remember what it was about. But yeah, so that's No Girls Allowed in the Missing Dinosaur Bone. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for being a part of this. We only have a few more episodes of the first season of this show left, and then it's on to season two. Who knows? Maybe a book will get published in the meantime. But again, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. And I will see you all next time, deep in Bear Country.